It's Andy Parks live from the Washington Times on 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. And I'm joined now by Brett Decker, Washington Times editorial page editor. I know it's not Friday yet, and we'll do our weekend review tomorrow. But I wanted to talk with Brett today about a piece that's in today's Washington Times. And if you haven't read it, you really must read it. It's called Consequences of Obama Weakness. And it is by Brett, and thanks for joining me this afternoon.
Hey, Andy. You know, I was about to say thank Allah it's Thursday, but because I usually open up with a joke, and, you know, it's not really a joking day, you know?
No, it's not. It's a very sad day, and, you know, reading your piece today, you bring back a lot of memories. One in particular is Ronald Reagan and the strength that he exhibited. And, you know, he made his point throughout the world that you don't mess with the United States of America. And the current resident in the White House just doesn't have any of that.
You know, it's one of the things we've always, you know, in the piece I quote this famous Machiavelli line, it's safer to be feared than loved.
Yeah.
You know, the American policy has always been we didn't have to choose between the two because people loved us because of the principles we espoused and pushed in the world on, you know, freedom and human rights and liberty for all and the support we gave to people who are oppressed, you know, because of communism or whatever. But then the other part of this, and other empires get this a lot better than we do, and sometimes we do, is, you know, part of how you keep your power is based on fear, and people have to be afraid of poking you. And what Reagan got, which is sort of the central part of my piece, is the 1986 bombing of Libya. We sent warships to bomb Tripoli and Benghazi. You got to make people feel it when they attack a superpower. You know, when the British Empire was on top of the world, and I think they, you know, they kept it together for a really long time. If you look how difficult it's been for us in the post-World War II period. I mean, the British kept that thing going for over a century, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But it's because they knew you needed, if somebody took you out, even if it was just some outpost where, you know, some colonial service bureaucrat got killed, you had to hit hard, and you had to make people afraid of touching anybody. The British Empire had this, I mean, and later in the 19th century, they got rid of it because they're so over the top. But when the Royal Navy ruled the seas, they had this rule that any ship they came across had to lower their flag and salute a British ship going by.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because they're so powerful, everyone had to basically genuflect to them. And you know, America's never been that way. But what we have to do is, we don't, everyone talks about the arrogance of U.S. power. We've never been an arrogant power. We've always been the first to help people out. But, I mean, you know, people think they can get away with a little bit because, you know, because we're a benevolent power. And, you know, this is a case where people know Obama's not going to, you know, he's a weak leader.
Yeah. You made mention of Muammar Gaddafi regime and the effect of Reagan sending a missile up his tent.
Yeah, right.
You know, and actually taking out one of his kids, if I recall correctly. That was, to me, an inspirational moment. That showed that, you know, you don't mess with the United States of America and everyone else in the world, you better be watching this. And I love the fact that he came back and said, you know what, we'll do it again. You want to play this game? We'll do this again.
Yeah, you know, the backdrop on that, in 1985, you know, the early 80s, there's tons of terrorist activity in Europe, especially against just regular citizens. You know, the stuff you see in Israel now was all over the place in Europe. Airport bombings, discotheques, right? There's a famous bombing at a disco in Berlin where U.S. servicemen hung out. And you had bombings in the Rome and Vienna airports in 85. And you had Americans killed in all these different incidents. So Reagan just said, you know what, Gaddafi's behind this. So he sent 30 planes, just, you know, pummeled two of these cities. And as you mentioned, Gaddafi's daughter was killed. Two of his sons were almost killed. Gaddafi was supposed to be seriously injured. I mean, we didn't get any reliable reports out of that. But he just disappeared for a decade or something.
Longer than that.
And then when he finally resurfaced, he's talking about trading with America and, you know, how we needed to build bridges. And so, I think this is a lesson is, you know, if they kill or harm or harass our people, you have to hunt them down and kill them or kill the people they depend on or the people they love. Make them feel what it's like to take out an American citizen. You know, for every, you know, the British had sort of these rules. For every one of ours, we'll take out 1,000 of yours. I mean, you can't really do that in the 21st century. But what you can do is, you know, get them where it hurts. And it worked with, Gaddafi.
Yeah. Mitt Romney's comment immediately following the attack on the embassy. I wanted to touch base with you on that just a little bit.
Yeah.
I personally didn't find anything wrong with it. In fact, I found it right on target. Some people, particularly on the left, are offended by a candidate getting involved in this, although Obama himself did it back in 2008.
Obama did it, and I tell you, you know, Obama's weakness is what caused this problem. It's not like these things just happen or these are things are coincidences, right? People sense that we have a president who isn't going to defend our national interests, and that dares people to take on America. So, you know what? That is almost a bigger political issue than even the terrible economy.
Yeah.
If America becomes a doormat of every little third world Arab dictatorship, you know what? That's a presidential issue.
Yeah. You and I have talked about some of his bowing in the past. And that's what he's done. He's just kind of, bent over at the waist for some of these regimes, and he's made big mistakes in the process.
Well, if he gets reelected, I think bowing is even too manly. I think he's going to just start curtsying, you know? He's going to wear a little skirt and do a curtsy.
Oh,
but I mean, these things aren't an accident. You know, everyone, you know, the last couple of weeks, everyone was shocked because there's a Russian submarine in the Gulf of Mexico patrolling our coast. Well, when he talks about hitting the reset button with Russia, when he's, you know, whispering to Medved about, we'll have more flexibility after the election, when you unilaterally cut our nuclear arsenal when Russia is growing theirs,
mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, you're telling people do whatever you want. And it's not only the Russians. It's to, like, the Mexicans, the drug gangs. It's to the to the radical Islamists. It's just saying, and look at, I mean, this is a president who did the, you know, Islamic morning call to prayer to a New York Times reporter in Arabic, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So everybody, you know, there's all this talk, is he Muslim or isn't he? You know, I'm running this 5-part series this week by Daniel Pipes
mm-hmm.
on all the different Muslim stuff and Obama's background. It doesn't really matter if he's Muslim or not, but he definitely has Muslim sympathies, and he sees the world from their perspective. He thinks America and American so-called imperialism is what makes these people frustrated, instead of, no, it's the dictatorships that keep them down,
or it's their
crazy religion that keeps them down. But he sees it from their view instead of our view, and our view is, you know, we're a country that espouses freedom and trades with people and helps other people become rich and free. And for somehow he thinks we're the oppressor.
Yeah.
And I think that's what a lot of it boils down to.
Yeah. What was your reaction when you found that he hadn't been attending these security briefings, these daily briefings, on a regular basis?
I mean, this is an astounding thing. He for like a week before September 11th, didn't go to a single intelligence briefing. The president has a daily intelligence briefing that it can be the CIA director that gives it to him, anybody he wants. He's president.
Mm-hmm.
And for a week before September 11th, he didn't go to it. And so, one, I mean, how much callous disregard is that,
mm-hmm.
considering how auspicious of a day that is and how tempting it is for the bad guys,
sure.
right? And part of this has been reflected in his policy and in how his administration has run the government as well. During the Bush administration, they always put all of our overseas installations on high alert on
mm-hmm.
September 11th, and we didn't do it this year. I mean, really? So do we really think we're that safe? I mean, it's sort of a chilling naivete about the situation in the world, and it's a democratic problem. You know what? The first thing I remembered when I saw he was skipping security briefings, I remembered President Clinton. You know, James Woolsey, remember when he was the CIA
sure,
director?
Yeah.
President Clinton didn't meet with him for a year and a half
mm-hmm.
with the CIA director.
Yep.
Woolsey went every day to the White House to deliver the intelligence briefing himself, and they would keep Woolsey sitting on a bench in an antechamber, and not once did he call in his CIA director. And this is this intelligent intellectual, right? Woolsey's up there with John Bolton, right? He's one of the big names
yeah.
in foreign policy. Clinton not once brought him in and asked him, you know, let me pick your brain. So that was the first thing I thought of. I thought of that Woolsey
yeah.
business with Clinton and Obama. You'd think a president would just want to know. And I think the big question this asks is, is there anything in those briefings that might have helped us avoid all this carnage this week?
Sure.
You know, maybe somebody could have told the president something. He'd say, you know what, let's be on high alert.
Yeah.
But it takes presidential action. Even more than that, it takes a president that cares. And we have one who doesn't care because he thinks America's on the wrong side.
Yep. All right, my friend. It's a great piece, folks. You need to check it out. It's in today's Washington Times. It's called Consequences of Obama Weakness, and it's by Brett Decker, Washington Times editorial page editor. And we'll talk again. 527, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT.